On the Shore, another Monday, another show. Don't get used to our consistency and weekliness. Sometimes there'll be one on Wednesday, then Friday, and then some on Monday. I wouldn't plan on Monday. Because maybe we'll do a Wednesday one.
We're doing Wednesday this week because we're both off.
Yeah. And
there's cats losing their minds around this apartment right now.
That's all right. We're going to pretend like we didn't just have that happen to us right now. It's a fun On the Shore. We're a little kickback, relax, mainly because I can't corral these cats. And if you ever try to catch a flying set of knives, it's quite difficult. So we're going to talk about the two stadiums, the Major League Baseball stadiums in the city of Chicago. Shout out to the Chicago Dogs on Twitter. I think they had a little dig. I couldn't tell who they were digging. I think they were obviously digging Comiskey 2 or Guaranteed Rate or whatever we want to call it, because Impact Field, which is just outside of the city, it's technically not Chicago, but it's in one of the northern suburbs there. It's very, very close to the city, where the Chicago Dogs play, an independent league team. They have a very nice field. It's called Impact Field. They posted a picture on their Twitter. It said second best baseball stadium in the city of Chicago. And I went, that's a bold claim, because there's two big league parks. So which one are you saying Impact Field has topped? I think we all know which one they're saying.
Or maybe it's trying to create this narrative of, oh, we threw it out there. Now everyone else is going to have an argument between, wait a second, who really is number one? Who's got that best ballpark?
Yeah, I don't think it's really a question, though.
No. Comiskey is a great ballpark to watch a baseball game in, but Wrigley is like the Regal Church. It's like being in the Abbey. It's just so historic and so memorable. There's not really an argument for or against it.
And in terms of ballpark service, in terms of how efficiently everything's run, in terms of how nice people are to you on your way to the seat, in terms of how easy it is to get to your seat, in terms of how easy it is to get to the stadium, at least for me personally, I understand for some people it's difficult to get to Wrigley, but boy, in terms of stadium, I don't think it's really close. And I love the Sox. But boy, if that baseball team, like if there were some other, I don't even know how to explain it. Like if the baseball team weren't interesting, I'm not sure there's really a reason to go down there. I mean, other than just the pure joy of watching baseball. I love watching baseball, but you're not going for the stadium. You're going for the Sox.
I mean, unless you really are interested in getting into a fight. I mean, that's been a really great play. I know it's happened at Wrigley this year, too, but
well, you almost got into a fight over a Guaranteed
Rate. Oh, my gosh. This past weekend was nuts.
What happened?
Well, we sat down in our seats. First of all, this guy next to us from New York City, I do not like people from New York City at this
point. I doubt
he's
from New York City. I bet he's from New Jersey.
No, we talked to him. He's from Long Island, actually. So there you go. That's your answer. So New York City, but not. He's from Long Island. And first of all, I said to the guy after we got to know him, I said, dude, you know, at the start of our conversation, you're lucky that someone who lived on the South Side wasn't, like, listening in, because this is exactly how our conversation started. He goes, oh, hey, are you from around here? I said, no, I'm in from, you know, North Side, but I'm a big White Sox fan. I really like coming to the ballpark. And he's just expletive after expletive. Oh, my gosh, you guys have this effing, you know, horrible ballpark. You have this horrible experience. I had to climb all these stairs. The escalator wasn't working. I had to ride on this crappy train, which who from New York City is comparing our subway to their subway as better or worse, right? Like,
yeah.
And then he said, there's nothing.
Ours didn't get knocked out by a hurricane.
Yeah. Well, and then he said, there's nothing to do around the stadium. He called the neighborhood shitty, which just don't say that. Whether you agree with it or not, don't say it. And he said, there's no bars around there, which I disagree. Shout out to our friends over at Turtles. That's a great place to go before a White Sox game.
Just because you don't know doesn't
exactly
mean. And you know, the slander about the city, like, did he only get off at Midway and hop on the train to go to the ball game? Like,
exactly.
Did he not, like, look anywhere else in town? Like, and listen, anybody that wants to talk about the South Side, I get the numbers, but every city in America, not just New York, not just Houston, not just LA, but I'm talking Dayton, I'm talking Indianapolis, Columbus, every city in this country has bad neighborhoods.
Sure.
Every city in this country has places where you might want to hold your wallet tight when you're walking through, right? Every place in the country has that. Every place in the world has areas like that. And so the fact that people from
New York City,
which, by the way, had the most violent decade of any city ever in the 70s. The fact that people from New York want to say that type of stuff about Chicago just shows their ignorance. When you have 16 million people sharing that much air, they tend to get pretty thin up there.
But anyways, that was just the start to what was essentially an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. We get there, and that guy starts talking poorly about the city of Chicago. And then all of a sudden, we realize, my buddy, Jacob Jones, who's a great ball fan, we've gone to a lot of ball games with each other. We went to Wrigley last time he was in town, so we really wanted to get to Comiskey, or, well, Guaranteed Rate. And so
I hate that.
The guys behind us were probably a solid 10 beers deep, but they were just chatty, having a great time, having a ball of a time, maybe being a little bit too explicit. But, you know, it's a great atmosphere to watch a ball game in, loud, rowdy, talking crap about the opposing team. That was enjoyable. The people then, five seats over to the left, they start befriending a little bit because I think they can tell that they're also getting really blasted at the ball game. Which, first of all, there's nothing wrong with getting blasted at a ball game. I've gotten blasted at a ball game. You've gotten blasted. Like, we've all had a couple too many drinks at a ball game, but we may, you know, we had a good time. We didn't do anything stupid, right?
Yeah, I don't understand the guys that get more drunk and speak louder. The more drunk I get, the quieter I get.
Well, all of a sudden, this guy who we knew was pretty hammered had definitely gotten to a point where he'd had another eight beers. I mean, every time he left, brought two beers back, down two beers, left, two beers back. Finally, the next time we look over, he has not returned to our section. He's two sections over. He's lost. He's hanging over the railing, and he keeps wobbling forward and back, and his beers are now dripping down onto the seats below him. Someone is starting to video this, and then the group of guys next to us yell at him, "Hey, you should take your shirt off," which, of course, he's like over there like, you know, like he gives us the look of like, "Dare me to do it, man. Dare me to do it." Like, and then all of a sudden, 40 people start chanting, "Take it off. Take it off. Take it off." I can't believe this hasn't been on Barstool yet. He takes his shirt off. He waves it around his head three, four, five times. And then all of a sudden, not the same number of people, because at this point, I think most people are like, "We might have gone too far. This is getting a little bit excessive." And now 10 other people start chanting, "Throw it away. Throw it away."
Shirt?
So from 533, he steps back like Peyton Manning in the pocket and chucks this thing down to the lower level.
His shirt.
His shirt. So he is now shirtless.
What shirt was he wearing?
It was a gray White Sox shirt. Mm. And this was videoed by our friends from New York City. I hope that somehow it gets on the internet at some point. Which, by the way,
do people from New York even know how to work the phones?
Whatever. So, by the way, as this man is finally coming back to our section, all of a sudden, the bleachers turn into a standing ovation in the middle innings during a break, which we then realize is because there's a group of about five people being let out by security, which we went and found out later that day. There was another fight out in left field at the White Sox game. And let me tell you, I've had a lot of fun at White Sox games, and I even still had a lot of fun at this last one. But that same guy, the shirtless guy, who we've now identified as shirtless guy, right? He is now standing next to Jacob in the alley, in the aisle.
Jacob, a friend that went to you at the ball
game. The friend that went to the ball game with me. So we're here. He is now directly to our right, and he is now blocking the entire aisle, and he's taking his empty beer cups.
Shirtless,
and taking his empty beer cups, and he is now stacking them in the aisle. And, you know, people are trying to get by him. They get by him, and he's now stacked him in the aisle. Here's the thing that I thought was most amazing. He was belligerent, drunk. You could not understand him. Security comes up to him in the aisle, and they say, "Excuse me, sir, you know, you seem to be getting a little bit out of hand. We need you to kind of control yourself a little bit here and take your seat." And they didn't throw him out. They just let him take his seat.
Oh, guys, fellas.
Hold on. This is where it gets best.
This is why.
This is where it gets best. It's now the bottom of the eighth inning, and now he is getting up, and he's getting ready to go. And, I mean, you would have thought that he just started going down a black with moguls with the wipeout and yard sale that he had into the wall down the stairs. I have never seen someone that hammered, have that bad of a fall, and then get back up. It was absolutely nuts. Which, of course, at this point, we are now all laughing.
Get him another beer.
Which then leads to the guy next to me, who is clearly his brother, to say, oh, yeah, Jack, don't you think that's really funny? That's really funny. And now he's inching closer and closer to me. And I'm like, great. Now this is wonderful. I'm either going to have to run off or stand my ground.
So you had belligerent people yelling, normal.
Normal.
Totally normal. You had a man take his shirt off, a little outside of the normal, but, you know.
He then threw it to the lower level, definitely
outside the normal, but again, not going to go crazy, but the stacking cups while shirtless.
That's pretty good. It's sensational.
It's pretty good.
The yard sale wipeout post that, trying to get out of the ballpark.
That felt inevitable. That was the least surprising part.
This is how bad his fall was. His Apple Watch was completely shattered.
Like, it's hard to break those
things. Think about how hard you just hit the deck. He probably would have had a broken wrist if it wasn't for Apple. Shout out to Apple. They don't sponsor us, but they could. You guys make good equipment. Give us a call.
Especially watches.
No. But also, fun fact.
But that's, I can't believe they didn't kick him out. I mean, and that really goes to another thing where I've got a couple stories. That's what this podcast is about, just stories from the ballpark. Here's the thing. You know, I came into this season specifically with a very open mind about the Chicago baseball teams. And I was definitely, I'm a Reds fan, so I knew I wasn't going to be a Cubs fan. But I just wanted the logo and the uniform and the being Chicago White Sox, I wanted it to speak to me. And it did, despite having like three just bad experiences in terms of customer service at that ballpark in a row. And that's how I knew. I was like, okay, I really do like the White Sox. If they can treat me like this every time I go to the ballpark.
You like the team. You don't necessarily like.
I despise some of the people that work around that stadium. Because here's the thing, okay? The announcement that is playing that gives you the rules for the game. Like, okay, you're not allowed to have a bag this big. You're not allowed to have this, that, what section it is. The rules for that are playing on a loudspeaker, okay? Now, that loudspeaker is pretty hard to hear. You know why? Because we're in a big crowd moving towards a gate at a baseball game. So not everybody's going to hear that announcement. Jess and I had looked up the bag rules of what you're allowed to bring into a Major League Baseball game, followed them to a T, even got the tape measure out and measured the thing. Okay? So we're walking up and we have a bag, and a security guy, before we're even at the gate, comes right up to me and says, Didn't you hear the announcement? No bags. And I'm like, it's 12x6 or whatever it's supposed to be. He's like, you need to open up your ears and you need to listen. The announcement says this bag. And I'm like, whoa, man, I haven't even flown off the handle yet. And, you know, he's just like, it's like he approached me.
It's like Angel Hernandez when someone asks, hey, is that going to be your strike zone today? And all of a sudden he takes his mask off and get in your face. You're like, wait a second.
It's like, dude.
I was not ready for this argument.
I did not elevate the emotion to the level that this security. And listen, I've had interactions. I've elevated emotions before.
We've escalated.
I understand when it's me that escalated. But this guy brought it to a whole nother level. Another thing that happened to me at the same gate, they had an intern, bless his soul, bless his heart. They had an intern with a little index card with all the sections, because of COVID, they're trying to quarantine off the sections. A little index card, Max, with all the sections on it. And this was with you. He had an index card with all the sections on it and said,
That's right.
Stop people before they get through security and make sure they're going to the right section. Because it's a little confusing on our tickets, which, by the way, figure it out. It's not that hard.
Well, actually, now you can actually now enter at any gate, at least at the last game.
It's not a big deal.
The last game I went to, we were now allowed to enter at any gate.
Well, hopefully that'll be the last time this issue ever happens. But here's the thing. He had it on an index card. He said, can I see your ticket? I said, yeah. I told him the section number. I showed him the ticket. He checked the index card. He said, okay, you're good. We go get to the front. They deny our ticket. And I look at him and I go, well, you better tell that guy up front who double-checked me that he should know what sections are what. And he's got it on an index card. You're not even asking the kid to remember it. You wrote it down for him on an index card, and you couldn't even get that right.
And Sam Fortino and I turned around and looked and saw this incident happen, and we're like, we're just going to keep on going.
You should have, because you wouldn't have been let in at our gate. So
we got a ball game to go to.
But then the worst, the worst thing that's actually ever happened to the ballpark wasn't something that happened to me. We were walking up. This was early in the season. We were walking up to one of the beer stands in the upper sections, and we heard an interaction between a member of management and the bartender because they had taken away the tip line for the bartenders, which has been fixed quickly because it was complained about, as it should have been. But this guy is arguing to her about it, and we're walking up, so she's trying to end the conversation, and she says loud enough for us and four other fans to hear. She says this to a bartender. This person is bartender certified, licensed, whole thing. She says, well, you go ahead and keep complaining. You guys are real easy to replace.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Are you kidding me?
But this is a post-COVID thing. It's like, because look, you understand, we understand service industry.
They're not acting like that at Wrigley, though. Everybody at Wrigley's real happy to work there. They love working there. They let you know they love working there.
And most of the fans have been more Wrigley as well. But I will say this, so far on the South Side, if you talk about the experience that I had with a bunch of fans, a ton of them, two different groups, right? 12 different people all sitting behind us. I can understand a little bit more now why maybe customer service down there has been a little different, because it is a little bit more affordable. It does mean that the clientele is going to be a little bit different, which we understand. And most of the fans just want to go have a good time and watch a great baseball game, right? This is a no judgment zone. Most people just want to go have a great time. But at the same time, if you're going to be dealing with 1,000 fans, and if even just 100 of them on a daily basis are going to give you trouble, all of a sudden, your attitude is definitely going to change real quick.
You had a guy taking his shirt off and stacking cups, and they wouldn't even kick him out of the ballgame. So I don't want to hear none of this.
Well,
they can't handle trouble.
I will say, too, our section, full disclosure, was very entertained. I don't think anyone around us really wanted him to be thrown out. I think more for his own safety. Once the fall happened, we're like, all right, someone needs to get him home. But we were, I mean, come on. There's a guy shirtless at a fun ball game after Billy Hamilton hits a home run, his second of the season, and he's waving his shirt around and throwing it down to the second level. It was awesome.
As soon as somebody at Wrigley saw his nipples, he'd have been out of there.
I don't know. Maybe not out in the bleachers.
No. It's a little different out there. But I don't really care. It's just about you should engage customer service.
But it is weird how the experience at both ballparks is different, though, because, again, down on the South Side, one of the things I greatly appreciate is that I think it's a real show. I mean, they're putting on a show. The video boards are so unbelievably informative. I think they're more informative than any ballpark I've ever been in.
Yep.
And they're great at that. Additionally, you know, in baseball, like in a football game, when the introductions happen and there's a full crowd at the stadium, people are getting loud, fired up, and getting into it. At baseball games, I feel like a lot of ballparks are not great at getting you really engaged for the first pitch, right? They do a video intro, but it's not phenomenal. They do a lineup introduction, but it doesn't pump everyone up. At Guaranteed Rate Field, I feel like everything that's happening pregame is slowly but surely making the crowd a little louder, and a little louder until they get to that peak of, and here are your 2021 Chicago White Sox stand as they take the field. And well, you know, like, there's a lot of stadiums that do not do that in baseball. They do a great job of that, right? In Wrigley, a little bit different. Wrigley is about
intentionally, yes.
And we've heard that. We've had a conversation with Tom Fitzgerald, who is a ticket rep with the Cubs, who is also a client of ours. He was talking to, I kind of overheard a conversation he was happening with Corey the other day about this, my significant other. And what he was telling her was that, well, you know, there are things that other stadiums and other ballparks do in the country that we recognize are not Wrigley, right? Wrigley is about, we know you're an informed fan, we know you're an educated fan, and we know you're here for this product that is the game. That's the product, right?
Whereas, that's why the video boards kind of suck.
The fact they even have
them at all. No, but like, it sucks they had to build them.
It kind of does, but at the same time,
at least only one of them. Because
but over time, those video boards, they'll use them in more creative ways.
Right now, they're pointless, and they just take away the view.
But I think it's because, again, Cubs fans, especially those,
they don't even put balls and strikes or miles per hour on any of the outfields. If you sit in a section down the right field line and you have a little bit obstruction of the left field bleachers down the first base line, you actually can't tell the score without looking out at the, which I love, the old scoreboard, but you've got a point at the bottom. Now, imagine my fiance, who's never been to Wrigley Field or never seen an old scoreboard like that, trying to point to her where the score is in center field. Like, and they've got two giant video boards in right and left that do not even have the score
sure.
of the game. Like, I just, some of these things just need a quick audit of what we need to put on a video
board. But again, it's this pure, it's the what Wrigley is so great at. And why I really can't complain even about things like that.
No,
is that a pure baseball fans like you and I, when we walk into that stadium, we feel like we're taking a trip back in time.
Yes.
And that's so cool to people like us who love this game and know the history and know everything there is to know about the old Cubs and the old Reds and the old Dodgers and the Yankees and
just even that stadium's place in American
right?
history.
And so then when you walk in and the first thing you see isn't a big video board or isn't a big TV stand, but instead it's lighted bulbs that have the balls and strikes on them still being in the seats. That's a cool moment for fans like us. Now, it's not for everyone, right? Like, again, you know, Corey hasn't gotten to experience Wrigley Field yet. And, you know, she played softball and is a big baseball fan and is connected to the history. So I think she'll be a fan of it. But it's also a very different experience from someone, you know, her and I grew up in Houston, Texas, going to Astros games. And that was, at the time it was built, was one of the most advanced ballparks
modern,
in the
yeah.
country. Very modern, right? Very, very different from what Wrigley is, where you have thousands of obstructed view seats still, where you have video boards that, you know, sometimes tell the story but don't tell the whole story.
Wrigley,
it's just different.
It's the only ballpark, stadium, arena, God knows how many I've been in. It's the only one that I don't like yelling in. It's the only one. It's the only one I've ever yelled out loud and then felt like bad about it.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not rowdy at Wrigley.
It's historic. It has this, and maybe it's just because of you and I really understanding, not just understanding, a lot of people understand the history of the game. You and I are almost emotional about the history of the game for some whatever reason. And Wrigley Field provides that feeling of history more than any building I've been in. I've been in the White House. I've been at the Lincoln Memorial. I've been like at the steps of the Capitol. Like, I've been at historic sites. Nothing's made me feel like I was stepping back into time, quite like that first time I walked into Wrigley. And I think one of the key, because I felt different, when we sat behind home plate up in the upper sections, and I could see the video board the whole time, I actually had a different feeling about the stadium than when I sat in the terrace outfield seats, where I was only really looking at home plate, and I didn't really look at the video board. That's when I really felt the, because it was Jackie Robinson Day, and Wrigley Field was the last National League stadium standing, is the last National League stadium standing that Jackie Robinson played in. So I see all those 42s out on the field, and I just squint in my eyes, and it felt like I literally time traveled. And it's the only building I've ever felt like that in, where I felt like I actually literally time traveled, because in the White House and the Lincoln Memorial, there will be modern things, but the game of baseball has never changed. And if you just simply don't look at the video board in left field and from the outfield seats, you look past third base and at home, you can't really tell the type of clothes that people are wearing or the jewelry or the iPhones or the watches. You just see a flock of people and you see guys with mitts and the same uniforms, and it's baseball and time carries on. It's the same thing over and over again. And you really, when you look at the stadium from those angles, you really do get that time travel feeling. At least I do. I don't know how everybody else feels, but because Jess said, oh, it was just really pretty. And to me, I was like, it's more than just pretty. It's time travel. That's why I didn't understand when Cubs fans argued about the video boards. Now that I've been, I 100% understand. I 100% understand why they didn't want any of them built, you know.
I think the other profound thing, and that was very eloquent, but the other profound thing about the feeling of Wrigley and the feeling of baseball itself, especially for those who are big fans, is that baseball is a sport of eternal youth.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the other part of you've been in the White House, right? But that's an adult space. That's history. The White House is not made for kids. No. It's not made for entertainment. It's made for business. It's made for history. It's made for democracy. It stands for things that are meant to be profound. Wrigley's only intention is to stand for distraction, entertainment, fun, and for a long time, not even winning baseball, really. It was literally a distraction.
You had literally right? just loved the game.
I loved Scott Johnson, you know, when I came to Chicago. He was kind of the first person after I had gone to Wrigley, and he said that he hadn't gone and had, well, he had gone once they had done all the upgrades and the updates and everything, and now he doesn't go. And his reasoning for it was, is that, you know, people didn't understand that Wrigley kind of was a space that was, in a way, welcoming to all people. It had no, like, interest in who you were, what your status were. You could buy $5 tickets on the street. And it's something that, unfortunately, the city of Chicago, there's something that you and I will never understand here, and it's the battle that a lot of people have with the Ricketts family and how they went about becoming owners of the club and the changes that they have ignited in the surrounding area, and how from a modern standpoint, that is what it is. It's capitalism, right? There's going to be nicer restaurants. There's going to be nicer buildings. There's going to be a nicer ballpark.
Gallagher Way
is very
nice.
Right, it's going to be cleaner. It's going to be better. But in some senses, it loses its sense of significance when you change something that once was so consistent for so long. And that's why people get upset about it. It's not because they are resistant to change. It's because everything else changed for like 60 years, right?
Yeah.
Because Wrigley and Wrigleyville was there. And it was very much the same for about 60 years. And finally, a new ownership group, a new ownership team said, we are going to change it. And it, you know, change over time is easier to accept than sudden change, right? If Wrigley would have changed at post-World War II and then changed again in the 60s and the 70s and then again in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, there's a reason that Wrigley just hosted a whole weekend of games and a beautiful weekend, and they were all day games, right? Every single game against the Reds had a 1:20 p.m. pitch. And it's because they're still doing the best they can in a modern setting to cater to those fans who love the history and past of it all.
They were the last stadium to have lights.
And there are still fans who think that every game played in Wrigley should be a day game, which, again, you know, we all know it's very, very nice for the working man and woman to get to go to a ball game and those 6:40 first pitches. But, again, something I don't get that a lot of my clients do, and then I'm starting to latch on to another client of mine, Will Snyder. He talks often about how, you know, he does everything he can to get to any Friday day game because there's just something different about
it. Oh, yeah.
Right? The weekend starts early. Everyone figures out a way to get out of work. And, you know, 38,000 people have jam-packed those seats by 1:20. And you have everyone who's ready for the weekend, and they're ready to launch it in this setting in a park, right? We're all sitting in a park watching people play baseball, and there's nothing more youthful than that.
Last thing I want to touch on, since we're talking about stadiums, that rumor that came out over the last few weeks, I don't know if we've gotten any more information on it or if you've had any more information on it, but the rumor that the Bears are considering a move out of Soldier Field, which, didn't you just watch the Chicago Fire do the exact same thing? They moved out to Bridgeport, complained about it for 2 years, begged to get back into Soldier Field. And now you're going to turn around as the NFL franchise and try to do the same thing? You're out of your mind. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Listen, I know you're still going to get to fill the stadium. You're an NFL team. But the fact, like, why not just have something cool, man? Like, I don't get these owners. It's a status symbol. You've got a stadium on Lake Michigan. It is historic. It's called Soldier Field. It has columns out the front. It's one of the most historic stadiums in the NFL. Now you're going to move out to Bridgeport and be like the Jets and the Giants, where you call yourselves New York, but you play in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Then you're out of your mind. Like, to me, it won't lose the Bears any money. It won't lose them any fans. But it's short. It's short-sighted. It's dumb. It's not anything that I really want the Bears to be a part of in terms of moving to Bridgeport. I think it's...
Well, to me, it's a no-win situation because it's good for the city of Chicago for them to be close. But also, we've reached a point where a lot of us are willing to admit that there comes a point where it's okay for modern buildings to be discussed for massive change. And there's been big renovations there before, but they, if they really want to, they can go bigger. They totally can. They can, and they can even act like they're not blowing up the whole stadium and then essentially do that by changing three quarters of it. You know, they can do whatever they want. But moving locations for them is just not good, and it needs to retain as much history as it can. And it's possible. We've seen, I mean, look at Lambeau Field. Like, I mean, it is a historic stadium that has undergone solid, strong renovations over the years, and there are tons of luxury boxes at that stadium. More, I think probably more or at least the same as all of the more modern stadiums in the entire league. And they just went about it in a way that, you know, maybe someone hasn't been creative enough yet to come up with for Soldier Field. So it's a no-win. I don't think it happens, just for the record. I really think it's just a talking point. A lot of NFL teams over the years will come up with talking points because they want to improve their lease deals. And the best way to do that is to try and try and pivot in the suburbs and all that, and really the only team that has tried to do that and it didn't work for him is Oakland, and so they ended up in Las Vegas, right? But most teams who tease about possibly moving to the suburbs or completely end up just getting a better situation in the end, which is probably what the Bears are going to do. So the only problem with the Bears is that they're in this similar situation to like an Oakland where it doesn't make sense anyways, right? So instead of trying to get what you want by saying you're going to move to the suburbs, just get what you want by just being brutally honest about the fact that the stadium is still outdated and that the capacity could be a little bit larger for a city this size with an NFL team, and then figure out a way to do that on the same site. I mean, that's the solution.
The location, though, like, I don't understand that, man. If I were a billionaire and I were loaded, I want my stadium to be at a cool spot. I want to be out in Bridgeport. Can't even take a red line out to it? Seriously, like when I was working my way and I was talking to a bunch of people with the Chicago Fire, every single person in that organization complained about that Bridgeport location. They were so grateful to be allowed to play at Soldier Field again because it was easier for them. Like, it was just easier for everybody, easier for fans, everything. And the people live in the city. Now, NFL teams, this is why the Bridgeport thing kind of scares me, because they could really do it. Because do you think the Bears aren't going to sell out whatever stadium they build in Bridgeport? No, they'll still sell it out. It's NFL football. Right? You can put NFL football anywhere, it's going to sell out. Look at Green Bay, Wisconsin. I mean, Green Bay, Wisconsin.
NFL should put a team in Bismarck, North Dakota, just to show everyone how easily they can sell out stadiums.
They could sell it out there, too. And Green Bay and Bismarck both have summer collegiate baseball teams as their second sports team in the city. The Green Bay Booyah is the second biggest sports team in the city of Green Bay. That is a summer collegiate baseball team with a capacity of 2,000.
That's nuts.
Okay? That's what Green Bay has, and they're still filling that stadium. So I take the threat a little more credibly of them moving out to Bridgeport, because here's the thing. It is easier to park. It is easier for fans that live in the suburbs, who are quite a bit of the fans of the Bears, to get to the stadium.
Also, now very suddenly, there's an underused site out there.
Yeah, well, now you got the coolest stadium arguably in the city because it's right there on the lake, out of use. Sox should go there.
That would be a little bit wild.
That would be awesome.
All of a sudden, they repurpose Soldier Field and put White Sox there.
Last thing I want to say about Comiskey, I don't care about the wind or the sun or whatever. The fact that that stadium points away from the skyline is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Dumbest. I don't care about the wind. You
There's
can show
still
me charts.
Beautiful views, though. There's still beautiful views.
Yeah, when you go behind home plate and look the other way, while everybody sitting up in the 500s has to look at what? I don't even know what that is. I don't know. Is that Chicago's version of farmland?
It's Gary, Indiana, actually.
Oh,
there we go.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to look at Gary, Indiana all day, huh? And then... But there's a beautiful view of the skyline from the stadium, and all you had to do was flip the thing around. That's like if you were doing Build a Stadium Creator Max on, like, MLB The Show or something, and I'd be like, dude, you got to turn that stadium. Like, this is a bad view. You're not looking at anything.
We need to find someone with a PS5 that lets us try that thing out.
Yeah. All right, that's the end of the end. That's the end of On the Shore. We just wanted to chit-chat about the stadiums, release a fun little episode. Sox and Cubs, they continue to roll on. I think the Cubs might actually be the favorites moving forward in the National League Central if they had not traded Yu Darvish. that would be definitely the case.
I like the you threw an asterisk in there all of a sudden. I still think that it's very likely they're the favorites.
Well, because every time I think about them as the favorites, I think about their starting rotation, and then I get less excited about it. So, but we'll see. Cubs, Cardinals, White Sox, they look like they're the best team in the AL Central, but we expect that. We'll talk more baseball next week. Hopefully some Justin Fields updates for all you On the Shore fans as well. All right, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.